Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. He said, this may not ever happen, maybe it couldn't ever happen, but if you ever came to the realization that everything you ever believed was not true, what would you do? Well, fortunately for you in asking the question, and fortunately for me of having had the experience, I have had that happen to me. It happened to me the first time I met Pujya Swamiji, actually. And I'm going to share the very personal experience of being in his presence for the first time. And I'm going to share it from my religious, spiritual background as well as from that experience. Don't worry if your religious, spiritual background is different. Remember that where we're going with this is that moment of realizing everything I ever thought, everything I was ever taught is wrong. So without going into the story of how I came to India and all of that, which is a different story, what's important to mention is that I was not on a spiritual quest or any conscious spiritual quest. I wish I had been on one. I might have gotten here before I was 25, but I wasn't. And what that also means is I didn't have any awareness of the need to look for, to find a spiritual guru, a guide. I was not someone who read about spiritual gurus or anything like that. I found myself in the presence of Pujya Swamiji because I wanted to stay at this ashram. And he's the president of the ashram. And at that time, in order to stay here, I needed his permission. And so I walked into the room, having been told I was going to meet the president of the ashram. Now, coming from the world I came from, I was expecting a man in a suit and tie with a briefcase and a desk to whom I would present my case and who would hopefully grant me the right to occupy one of the rooms here. I had no idea I was about to step foot into the presence of an enlightened master, that I was about to be in the presence of one of India's most revered spiritual leaders. As I'm walking into his room, 50 feet from getting there, the man who's bringing me is trying to give me this crash course in being in the presence of the guru as he's got me by the hand and he's bringing me in to meet him. And when we get there, you will do pranam, he says. What is pranam, I say. you'll bow down. And he starts to try to describe it to me. I say, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to just do whatever you do. I'm very good at following. I'm a very obedient person. You just do it, I will follow. We get there. It's a room full of people. Pooja Swamiji was giving open darshan. The room was full. And I had the awareness within a couple of minutes of entering that room that I was in the presence of a being who was divine. Now, I was raised in the Jewish tradition, and in the Jewish tradition, the concept of divinity in form is something that is considered sacrilege. Now, in the years that I've been here and I've had the opportunity to meet enlightened, incredible Jewish leaders and teachers, you realize, of course, that the way, and this is true about all of our religions, that the way that it's given to us in most of our churches and synagogues and whatnot by the people who happen to be teaching on that level is a very watered down version, a very kind of black and white version, not really the full enlightened version of any of our religions. But nonetheless, the way that I had been taught Judaism is God does not take form. We do not envision, conceive of, worship, think about, pray to God in any form. And to do so is not just wrong, but it's actually sacrilege. In the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not worship false idols, in form, animate, inanimate, living and breathing, made of stone or gold, either way, God does not take form. And as a non-religious 25-year-old, I had never had any place to question that. Okay, God doesn't take form. Fine. What movie are we going to see tonight? That was sort of about as concerned as I was about religious teachings. Here I was in a room with a being who I knew was an embodiment of the divine. Now, it wasn't as though all of the divine, all of God from all over the universe had left all of the places God was and had simply coalesced in the being of this saint in front of me. It wasn't that. It wasn't that he was the only thing that was divine. It was that there was a quality of being that was qualitatively different about this being than any being in whose presence I'd ever been, and that qualitative difference had to do specifically with how he embodied and transmitted divinity. So I knew I'm in the presence of the divine. And it didn't matter that I had spent 25 years being told that that doesn't happen, can't happen. I was having an experience that belied everything I had ever been taught. And what it made me realize in that moment was, well, if they were wrong about God, maybe everything I've been told isn't true. I mean, if you take something as fundamental as God and you say, well, everything I've been taught about it is now being belied by an experience I'm having. Maybe it's only a matter of time before everything I was taught gets undone by an experience I have. And it was for me the most extraordinary moment because it literally wiped my slate clean. I knew in that moment, I don't know anything. There is nothing I was taught by my family, in the synagogue, at Stanford, by any place I'd ever been, by anyone I'd ever known, that I could actually count on as fact if what I'd been told about God wasn't right. And so in that moment, I realized nothing I know can be true. And it was exquisite, actually, because it made that slate empty. Now, I realize when you asked it, that you've asked it from a place of perhaps not yet touching the exquisiteness of that experience. But realize that the universe clears something away in order to make space for something better. And if you've had a truth that was your truth, whether you're 8 or 18 or 28 or 80, if the universe has come in and cleared that away, it has done so in order to make room for something else. But there will be a time in which you may feel uncomfortably empty. If I can't count on what I've been told, if I can't count on what I believed, I'm sinking into a void of nothingness. And that void only feels like nothing until you allow yourself to sink with such faith that you realize it's actually everything you're sinking into, not nothing. There's a beautiful parable that I love of a man who's holding on to a rope for dear life. And suddenly he hears this angelic voice in his head that says, "Let go." And he says, "I can't let go. I'm going to plummet to my death if I let go." And the angel says, "Well, then let go just with one finger." And he's scared because when you're holding on for dear life, you really would like to do so with all 10 fingers. But the voice was so beautiful that he lets go with one finger. And slowly, slowly, this angel convinces him to let go with 9 of his 10 fingers, one finger at a time. And now she comes and he's holding on to this rope for dear life with only one finger, and she says, "Let go." And he says, no more now. I trusted you up to 9 fingers, but if I let go, I will plummet to my death. I will plummet into that emptiness. But her voice is so sweet and so soothing, and it inspires such faith in him that as she keeps coaxing him, he lets go. Convinced, now I'm going to plummet to my death. But he doesn't. And he's confused, and he looks down and realizes he's been standing on solid earth the whole time. And what I love about that parable is we think that we're holding on to that truth for dear life. We've all got it. We've all got our sets of truths. If I say to you, what do you know for sure? Some of it's helpful, some of it's not helpful. Some of it may be that I am worthless and horrible. Okay, not helpful. But nonetheless, it's a piece of illusory truth that a lot of us hold on to with dear life. What do you know for sure? That I can't trust anyone. Again, not so helpful. But something a lot of us hold on to for dear life. A lot of us have these truths. Maybe it's that this is the only one I can trust. Maybe it's that marriage is forever, that love is forever, that someone you love isn't going to betray you. Trust is forever, whatever it may be. Maybe it's that God always takes care of me. We have these truths, and we hold on to them for dear life. And then when life happens, we end up having to let go because something has just undone a truth. It no longer can be true. And we then find ourselves in this situation. As you said, well, everything you thought isn't true. Well, that's all 10 fingers off the rope. That's a plummeting into the void experience. There is nothing I can hold on to anymore because nothing I knew is true. But that's the time when you realize, oh, wait. I didn't need to be holding on to that truth. I'm on solid ground. There's a universe that is supporting you. There's an existence, there's a wisdom in existence that is supporting you, even if everything you've been told is a lie. What it means is that now you get to realize the truth of that earth which is supporting you, of that ground which is supporting you, of that self which is supporting you, that doesn't need other people's truths in order to stay afloat. It throws you into a situation of, okay, nothing I ever thought is true. I'm gonna plummet into the void. Which means that the only truth I know is the truth of the self with which, in which, as which I'm plummeting. And that's the truth that you're supposed to find in your life anyway. And here you are, very young, already being thrown into a situation of having to find it. So it may come with what feels like temporary pain, but that pain is clearing away space for something very beautiful. And when you find what you can trust, that's yours forever, because that's your truth. And that's the truth of the self. But not a lowercase s self, not a self in relation to others who are telling me things I'm supposed to believe. But it's the capital S self. It's the truth of who you are, that even if every single person in the world never tells you anything true again, even if nobody else in the world ever does something you can depend on, that truth of the self is the truth that we live in. And you're actually very blessed. I know it may not feel like that at the moment, but you're very blessed to be thrown into this at such a young age. Because most people don't discover that until much later in life. But your challenge is going to be not to get bitter, Because it's very easy to say, I can't trust. You can trust, but you just have to choose what to trust. And what you trust is the self. What you trust is that experience of the true self and your connection to God, whatever that means to you. There's a beautiful line in the prayers we chant here every morning that says, Tu akele nahi pyare, Ram tere saath me. And it means, my dear, you are never alone. God is always with you. And that's the opportunity. And again, you're young. You're young to be thrown into the situation of trusting God, finding God. But it's actually a beautiful opportunity. It doesn't matter if you don't call it God or think about it as God. If you think about it as yourself, your true self, your divine self, your ultimate self, that's also great. But just know that that true ultimate self is connected to something much greater and bigger, because otherwise it feels like the world is on your shoulders. So it's that ultimate self, that supreme self, that actually is connected to the greater self. Like any of these electrical appliances plugged into the wall, right? So the appliance is there. It's full in itself. And it actually gets the electricity from the main grid. So the blender doesn't actually have to generate its own electricity, or the mic or the fan or the light. It just has to be plugged in. And you're going to find in your life how to get plugged in, how to connect. But you're going to make it, and you're going to make it beautifully. And there's going to be a time when you look back and you say, thank God that happened, because that was the beginning of everything that really is true. True for you. That capital T truth, not just what you're supposed to believe, but the real truth.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Aliyah, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Why are we vegetarians? So there's a lot of reasons, okay? Now, let me ask you something. Let's say that you were walking down the street, okay? And you see a boy on the side of the road, and you can tell he's very, very poor. And that boy has a piece of bread, okay? And he's eating the piece of bread. But let's say you also were a little hungry. Not hungry like he is, of course, because you had breakfast that morning. But you are a little hungry. Maybe it's lunchtime. Would you take the bread from his hands? Why?
Because he will not get anything to eat.
Right, exactly, exactly. And so that would not be nice to take the bread from him, right? Okay. So one of the main reasons that we are vegetarian is because when we grow our wheat and our rice and our corn, those things, you can do two different things with them. Number one, you can feed people. So you can make bread and you can make pasta, you can make rice, you can make chapatis, you can make all those yummy things. Or you can take all that and you can feed it to the cows or the pigs or the chickens who become hamburgers and hot dogs and chicken McNuggets. Now, here's the problem. When we feed that to the animals, they don't become a hamburger overnight. It's not like they eat some food and then automatically it just transforms into a hamburger. Like Cinderella's chariot transformed into a pumpkin. It's not quite like that. They eat it and then they digest it. Like when we eat food, we digest it. And then we go to the toilet the next day and it comes out and only a little bit stays inside of us, right? And it gets in our blood and our tissues. So the animals keep eating and keep eating food for many years, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever it may be. And then finally, they get killed and cut up and they become our hamburgers and our hot dogs and our chicken McNuggets. So what that means is that if I'm eating non-veg, we know already I'm being mean to the cow and the pig and the chicken. That we know. Because obviously to kill somebody and eat them is not nice. Right? If I say, oh, you look so yummy. Can I just eat your ear off like that? Right? So that might be a nice thing to say, but it wouldn't really be a nice thing to do to eat your ear off. Or eat your nose off. Right? You might tell me, well, you can kiss me, but don't actually like start eating my body. Right? Okay. So we know that eating the body of the animals is mean to the animals. But it's a lot more than that. It's mean to that boy who doesn't have any food. Because every day, do you know, tens of thousands of children like you, they die because they don't have enough food. But we actually grow in this world enough grain. Grain means what we call anaj. So our wheat or our rice or our corn or our soy, all of the different grains that we grow, we actually grow enough to feed 10 billion people. Now, do you know how many people there are on planet Earth?
More than a lakh.
More than a lakh, yeah, many more. There's more than a lakh in Rishikesh. A lakh is 100,000, by the way. It's Indian numbering system. So yeah, there's more than a lakh in Rishikesh. Do you know how many people in the whole world?
I don't know.
Okay, that's okay. There's a little over 7 billion people in the world. Okay, so that's 700 crore, right? Somebody good with Indian math? Is that right? 7 billion is 700 crores, right? Okay, so there's more than 700 crore people on the earth, but we actually grow enough anaj every day for 1,000 crore people. So are there more people or is there more food?
More food.
You are so smart. Yes, exactly. Lots more food. So why are people, children like you, why are they dying of hunger?
Because they don't get food.
Right. And why don't they get the food?
Because they can't afford it.
Well, this is not actually the problem. Yes, if they had money, they could go to a supermarket and no matter if it was expensive, they could buy it. But the problem actually is that most of the anaj that we grow in the world, it doesn't go to people. It goes to the animals who we will kill to make hamburgers and hot dogs and chicken McNuggets. So if I have, let's say, a handful of wheat or a handful of corn, I can either feed that hungry boy or I can feed it to a cow or a pig or a chicken and let them digest it and let them go to the toilet and it comes out. And then they eat more the next day, and then they keep eating and keep eating. And out of all that anaj I give them, I get this much meat. And that much meat is bought by only a few people. So, can you think of 15 of your friends? Can you think of 15 people you know and you like, maybe in your class in school? Take a moment, think in your mind. Think of 15 people you like. Okay, tell me when you've got them in your mind.
I got them.
Oh, great, okay. So, if I have 16 kg of corn, let's say, if I have 16 kg of corn, I can give every single one of you, every one of you, 1 kg of really nice corn chapatis. You like corn chapatis? Good, yeah, I do too. So I can give every one of you 1 kg of good, yummy corn chapatis. Or I can take that corn and I can feed it to cows and pigs and chickens. And at the end, I can feed one of you hamburger. Only one of you. Now what that means is, if I feed you, those 15 friends of yours, you know what they get?
Nothing.
Nothing. Now that's not very nice to them, is it? Because they must be hungry also, right? So do you think it's nicer if we feed corn to everybody, or rice to everybody, or chapatis to everybody, or pasta to everybody, or hamburgers to only one? Mm. Which is nicer?
Feeding corn and
To everybody, right? So that's why we choose to eat vegetarian, because we only have a certain amount of anaj. And we have to choose, either we feed it to people or we feed it to the animals, and then out of 16, we only get one. 16 kgs of grain gives us 1 kg of hamburgers. But 16 kgs of grain gives you 16 kgs of bread or rice or pasta. Let me ask you another thing. Do you like trees? Today, Pooja Swamiji gave you all a tree. Did he give you a tree? Were you giving trees to people today? In the aarti, I saw you. Right there, you were standing there when he was giving trees, right? Okay, so we'll make sure you get one before you go also. Now, trees are very, very important. Do you know why trees are so important?
Because they also have a life.
Because they also have a life, yes, exactly. But do you know that trees also give us life? Did you know that? So someday in school, you are going to learn something really beautiful, which is trees give us life. We need oxygen to live. When you go, you're taking in oxygen. Where does that oxygen come from? The trees give it. The trees give it. And those trees give us life. But do you know that the people who are making the hamburgers out of the cows are cutting down all the trees because they need some place to put all their cows? And so in our rainforests in South America, have you heard of the Amazon?
Yes.
Oh, have you been? It's really beautiful. Someday maybe we can take a trip to the Amazon. Would you like that? Yeah, me too. So the Amazon rainforest is being cut down 1 acre every second. Think about it. Every time I clap my hands, a whole acre of trees is being cut down. And you know why? Just to make hamburgers. Just to make hamburgers. So this is why we are vegetarian. Because number one, we don't think it's nice to kill animals, because animals also feel. But number two, because we don't think it's nice to let other people starve, because there are sisters and brothers also. And number three, because we really like trees and we really like oxygen. And we think those things are more important than hamburgers. Does that make sense? Do you know about global warming? Have you heard about climate change and global warming?
Yes.
You've already heard about that. How old are you?
7.
Wow. Good. Wonderful. So do you know that according to the United Nations, which are people you can believe, the industry that makes your hamburgers and hot dogs and chicken McNuggets, what we call animal agriculture, so agriculture but not agriculture that gives us loki and pumpkin and nice veggies, but agriculture that gives us hamburgers, hot dogs, chicken McNuggets, they are the single greatest contributor, the biggest reason why we have climate change. So here we are, everybody doing everything they can, turning off lights every time we walk out of rooms and putting low flush things in our toilets and our showers and turning off taps while we brush our teeth and doing everything we can to save water and save energy and not pollute the environment. But the single greatest reason, the biggest reason for climate change is this production of non-veg food. So now what do you think we should do?
Be veg?
Yeah. You could leave her here with me. You want to stay here? You can teach everybody every night why we should be veg.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Mike Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. Why do people care so much about what other people think about them? Why do they crave so much attention, like on social media, numbers of likes and follows? So, it would be a much more mild dilemma if humans' yearning for the approval of others were as recent as Facebook. Things that are very recent are very easy to undo. But the yearning for the approval of others, the sense of, oh, what's this one going to say about me? What's that one going to say about me? That's been going on long before there were likes or follows on social media. It's been going on long before we had any of the technology that we have today. The concept of knowing who I am, of an identity, is of core importance to us. The crises that we face, when you talk about identity crises, the crises are all about, who am I? And when we don't know who we are, we look to the outer world to tell us. And so, craving people's attention, craving people's approval, it's not just so much that they should like me, it's that I am what people think of me. Look for a moment at this, the question raised, the issue of social media. So let's take it a step farther. Look at this craze of selfies, okay? Because it gives us a lot of insight into actually what it is that is propelling this. Now, long before selfie sticks were invented, you could only get that phone as far away as your arm, which means you can't get it very far away at all. Which means if you look at selfies that are taken without a selfie stick, what is the vast majority of the frame taken up with? Your face, right? Face of the person taking the picture. Now, here I am at the Eiffel Tower. Here I am at the Grand Canyon. Here I am at the Taj Mahal. And what are you seeing in the frame? My face. Here's my face with a little bit of steel behind it. Here's my face with what looks like a little bit of brown dirt behind it. Here's my face with what looks like a little bit of white marble behind it. That's me at the Taj, at the Grand Canyon, at the Eiffel Tower. Pictures of my face. Now, you take it a step further. After we've taken the selfie, it's never enough to just take it. The point of selfies is not to fill up my phone with lots of pictures of myself so that I can just look at them all the time. The point of selfies is, what do we do with selfies? We post them, right? Of course, we post them. We send them to people, we share them. And when we post them, what do we want?
Likes,
comments, exactly. Now, it's really interesting when you look at the psychology of that, okay? Because what you've got is perhaps the most oddly composed artistic image ever. Because, of course, taking a selfie, as any good photographer knows, you can't actually even get the proper angle, the proper lighting, the proper way. So there's no selfies that are actually beautiful portraits of the self. The face is always at some weird angle. Some part of it always looks way too big. Some other part always looks way too small. The lighting is always off because your hand is right there blocking the light, creating the shadow. So they're not even good artistic images. You can't actually see the Taj or the Eiffel Tower or the Grand Canyon because my face is blocking it. What is it that's going on? Because then when I post it, it's all about the likes and the comments. And if we post a selfie and you don't get any likes, like nobody comments, it's anxiety producing. I mean, people keep checking the phones. Why is nobody commenting? What? And you realize what it's about has nothing to do with my ability as a photographer. It has nothing to do with my beauty, because if it were all about beauty, I would get someone who actually could take a good picture, and I would say, now get me in my right angle, get me in the right way, take a good picture. So it's not about my skills as a photographer. It's not about my beauty, because I know that this selfie has distorted my face. It's not about actually showing people the scenery where I am. It's all about this drive for our existence to be validated by the world. If I take a selfie and lots of people like it and comment, oh, phew, I exist. I take a selfie and post it and no one likes it or comments. It's that anxiety of, well, didn't anybody see it? Doesn't anybody care? Meaning, don't I exist? And this is what's at the core of wanting people's approval, of caring so much what other people think, because if I don't know who I am building who I am out of the bricks of how you respond to me. So you look at me with love, well, I get to put the worthy of love brick in the temple of self-identity. You say to me, oh, you are so beautiful. I get to put the brick of beautiful in my temple of self-identity. You say to me, you are horrible and awful. And I put the brick of horrible and awful, the brick of shame, the brick of not enoughness, not rightness, in that temple of self-identity. And so I need you to approve of me, because those are the bricks with which I am constructing my sense of self. And so when it starts to look like a life or death matter to get people's approval, when people around us seem to care in a way that doesn't make any sense to us, what the neighbors think, what so-and-so thinks, what realize it's not about that person. It's that that person is a brick. And of course, the people who are close to us are bigger bricks. It's not a temple of self-identity with all equally sized bricks. We all decide who we're going to give the big bricks to. So usually the big bricks are parents. Right? You had parents who said you were wonderful, you're divine, you're worthy, you're whole, you can do anything, be anything. That's a great brick. pillar of a sense of self. But you have parents who, in their own struggle to be young parents and figure themselves out and their lives out at the same time, weren't able to give you that, you end up with a big brick of not enoughness, a big brick of not rightness, a big brick of should have been something else-ness. And this is where it matters so much to us. But of course, the solution is not, I need to surround myself with people who tell me that I'm beautiful and worthy of love and good enough and smart enough, and because that just limits my freedom. That limits the people I can be with. It limits the places I can go. It limits what I can do. Because if I need to do well to feel good about myself, well, I can't take any risk. I can't learn anything new. I can't make an utter fool of myself. Because, oh my God, then people are going to laugh at me. And the temple of who I am is going to crumble. And so I actually end up being stuck and in my own jail. And so it's really important that we become self-evident to ourselves, that it's not about what do other people say and do. It's not how do other people look at me. It's not I'm worthy because someone says I'm worthy, someone approves, someone likes, someone loves, someone follows, someone comments. It's I'm worthy because who I am is divine. Because that, of course, creates the other problem. If you start saying, well, I'm worthy because I'm generous, I'm kind, I'm good, I'm honest. Well, then on the day that I'm not so generous, on the day that maybe I wasn't as kind as I could have been, or as honest as I could have been, I'm not worthy. So the goal is not substitute the bricks of other people saying you're worthy because of what you do with bricks of my own worthiness because of what I do. But it's a substitution of worthiness based on what you do to worthiness based on who you are. Worthy because I am divine. Worthy because that creator, that power of creation, that energy, that consciousness, that love that makes flowers blossom and trees give fruit and rivers flow and caterpillars become butterflies and all that extraordinary, the energy of the universe is within me. I am that. When we chant, so hum, or aham brahmasmi, or any of these beautiful little mool mantras, you can say, foundational mantras, what do they all mean? I am God. I am that. Not that all of divinity all over the world has left everywhere else and has coalesced only in this 5'3" being. Not that I've somehow sucked the divinity out of the rest of the world and it's all now here. Not that my awareness of my divinity has made me less aware of others' divinity. Rather, it's the opposite. the awareness of who I am gives me an awareness of who others are. Because if I'm divine, so are they. And so this is where the only solution to constantly needing other people's approval, to that social media anxiety, that stand up in front of the class and do a math problem on the board anxiety, that fear of public speaking anxiety, that all of that that afflicts us, the solution to it all is the same. When you know who you are, even if people laugh, even if people criticize, even if people condemn, even if people ignore, the temple of self-identity doesn't crumble. Because it's not made of those bricks. It's made of bricks of truth. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.